The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. All discussion is limited to publicly available information and should not be interpreted as legal, professional, or financial advice. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license nor provide any financial services. Before making investment decisions, you should obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rocks, and welcome to the Ensemble Licensee podcast series. Ensemble is all about the positive evolution of financial advice and the ecosystem that is advice has the advisor, who we support voraciously. It has the practice, who via the engine room have had their moment in the sun, but the missing link was the licensee. It was not just a risk framework, but a go-forward organisation, as big and small, that put the foundation down to allow all of that to happen. So strap in and enjoy the Ensemble Licensee podcast series. Cheers.
For over 25 years, PM Capital has taken the road less travelled, delivering a disciplined, high-conviction approach to global investing and uncovering opportunities often overlooked by conventional investment strategies. Their Global Companies Fund has significantly outperformed the MSCI World Index since inception, driven by deep research, patience, and alignment with clients. In today's changing landscape, they offer clarity and conviction to help build more resilient portfolios. Learn more at www.pmcapital.com.au/explore.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rocks, and welcome to another edition of the Licensee podcast series. I am joined with a long-term friend, but first-time interviewee, Sam El-Shamar, who's the CEO and Managing Director at Finchley & Kent. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you, Roxy.
And before we get into the first 2 minutes of this podcast, and for all of those aspirational guests coming after Sam, Sam brought me presents before the podcast. So for all of those people I've interviewed, and you know who you are, you might want to reach out. Bribes will be accepted. But it was a very classy thing from a classy guy. And I suppose the listeners out there are going to get that feeling that Sam's business with his business partners is a genuine business, is what I've kind of got, and built around that kind of long-term, genuine, authentic nature. So with that in mind, Sam, we can now dispel all those myths, can't we?
We sure can.
Now, we met each other, I think, when we were in our 20s or something like that, but let's wind the clock back more than that, because I always like to ask people what their upbringing was that has led them to financial advice. Because for almost everyone, financial advice wasn't a career when you were growing up. You wanted to be an astronaut, a fireman, Lord knows what else, but financial planner wasn't even on the list. So yeah. So tell me, you grew up in so we actually had this conversation off air. You were born in Cairo, is that right?
Alexandria.
Alexandria. Oh, sorry.
That's right.
It's a bit of Melbourne, Sydney kind of vibe, isn't it?
Indeed, it is.
So, and how long were you in Alexandria?
I left when I was 3 years old.
Okay. And where did you go to?
Dad got a job offer in London.
Okay.
So we moved to London and we spent 9 years in London.
Okay, so you did your first schooling in London, is that right?
I did, yeah. And I had a very Cockney accent when I was growing up. We were in North London. But it was fun times. It was fun times.
And that would have taken you through the beginning of high school, is that right?
Just under high school, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, middle school, yeah.
Okay, and so what was his trade or skills?
Yeah, so dad was a doctor. He's still with us, so he still technically is a doctor, but radiologist by trade.
Yeah.
And he basically left Egypt when I was probably a year and a half old. Back then there was political turmoil in Egypt, and sorted himself out in London, got himself sorted, got himself established, and then I came across when I was 3.
Okay. And were you the oldest sibling?
Yeah, I've got a younger sister who's younger than me by 4.5. She was actually born in London.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a whole passport thing, I think.
We have the British and the Australian passport.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you come straight to Australia after that?
Or? No. So dad got a job offer in a little city in the Middle East called Abu Dhabi. Now, Abu Dhabi, Dubai is probably better known than Abu Dhabi, which is two cities in United Arab Emirates. So most people know Dubai because Emirates Airlines and blah, blah, blah. Abu Dhabi is a quieter, it's a bit like a smaller city. So he got a job offer there and we moved over. And I finished my high school there.
So I've just got to ask, a chap who kind of looks Egyptian with a Cockney accent back in Abu Dhabi, how was that? Was that fish out of water or what?
Well, not really, because I very quickly, well, I ended up going to an American school there because there was two choices at the time.
You know? Okay, so everyone playing at home trying to work out the accent, we're getting further to it.
Yeah.
Keep going.
So there was two schools to choose from, the English school and the American school, and I ended up going to the American school. So my Cockney accent ended up becoming a very stiff New York accent.
Okay, well, you're starting to get all the hallmarks of a savvy business person based out of the two stereotypes of those accents. So it's probably no surprise you've ended up where you've ended up. But your finance wasn't your first sort of preference, was it?
No. I mean, I look, like a lot of people, when they go to uni, they don't know what they want to do. I went to uni in America. And when I joined, American system is a bit different than the Australian system, where you don't really need to know what you want to do day one.
Sort of generalist for a year or
very
two, generalist, right?
For a year or two. So I dabbled between engineering, medicine, psychology, business, accounting. I found out very quickly that I like business and I enjoyed the business studies. And so I decided to finish a degree in business. And then when I finished, it was 1993. There was a recession in America. I couldn't get a job. Dad basically said to me, look, I'm not spending any more money on you. You need to now get a job. And I said, well, I can't get a job.
Still, you're still just spewing. You're not but nearly
yogged up. Exactly.
Hi, Dad, by the way. If you will be listening. He talks so much about you off air.
All positive. So he said, well, come home.
Yep.
Because, you know, you need to get a job. So I came home and I got a job. And being in and I went back to Abu Dhabi, basically. And Dad's been in Abu Dhabi for over close to 50 years. He's still there. I was just there visiting him in January, him and mom. So went back to Abu Dhabi, and very quickly I joined the Sheraton Hotel in their sales department. I realized very quickly there's no money in hospitality and ended up joining a offshore construction company. Money was great. Lifestyle was probably not so great. And then I met an Australian guy over there while I was working in Abu Dhabi, and we became really, really good friends. And
he's one of the few English accents you hadn't already had a crack at.
Well, pretty much. I mean, and at the time, you know, he ended up leaving and said, come visit me in Sydney whenever you want, open invitation. And back then, all I had on my mind was Crocodile Dundee. That's what Australia was known for, right? And I'm going, why would I go there? Sharks, crocodiles, spiders, everything kills you. Anyway, I'm sitting at work one day, very bored, called him up and said, listen, is that invitation still open? He goes, yes. I said, great. Got on the plane. Took me 2 days to fly out here. Layover in Singapore. Got to Sydney. I think I arrived about 7:30 at night. He picked me up. Took me to his place. Dropped off our luggage and said, right, we're going out. I said, well, it's taking me 2 days to get here. Can I just rest? He goes, no, you're only here for 10 days. We're going out. We went out. We got home at 5 a.m. And I called up work next day and said, I'm quitting. And I'm moving to Sydney.
So you weren't taken by a crocodile, clearly.
I was taken by a crocodile.
Oh, no, very good. No. Very good.
I loved, instantaneously loved the city, loved the people, loved the vibe, loved the whole aspect of Sydney in a very short few hours.
Wow.
Have you recently read a white paper or technical update that changed how you approach advice? Submit it to cpdcheck.com and have it recorded for CPD.
And then I moved back. I literally resigned, packed up a suitcase, moved to Sydney, jobless, had a bit of savings behind me, rented an apartment, looked for a job for 6 months, couldn't find anything. Got a call out of the blue saying, hey, you applied for a broker position with us. Why don't you come in for an interview? And I said, well, stockbroker. Fantastic.
Yeah, I've still got the New York accent.
So I went for an interview. Honestly, I just wanted, as soon as I walked in the front door, I wanted to work there. The vibe was amazing. It was just electric. I went through three interviews, I believe. Didn't even know what the job was. I just knew I just wanted to work there. Got the job. Everything was great. About 2 weeks into the job, I went to my boss and I said, so just wondering, when do we get paid? And he just laughed at me and said, this is commission only, son.
You're a self-employed contractor.
And I said, right. Okay. Well, I better learn how to swim. And the rest is history, right? Yeah. So, and Roxy, you grew up in that same environment.
Yeah. I think I came 2 years later, same thing. Thought it was a great environment. And, I was actually hunting for self-employed because that's kind of my background. But, the way I like to try and explain to people is we specialize in wealth accumulators.
Mm.
way back then. I mean, those wealth accumulators are now retirees,
yep.
if you can believe it, right?
Yep.
And I, given that you've been continuously in your own planning practice, I'd be curious to know how many of those clients you took on as 30-year-old, you know, bright-eyed primary school parents are now retiring. There'd be a few, wouldn't there?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Rox, when we started off, we were in our early, mid-20s.
Yeah.
A lot of our clients were either fresh out of uni or just starting a new job.
Yeah, 40 was old.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We didn't deal in that market. We dealt with the clients that are around our age, and you'd give them income protection and a savings plan, and off you go. And now these clients are now in their late 50s, early 60s,
yeah.
and you're planning their retirement.
What's hilarious is quite often you probably brought forward their ability to purchase a dwelling in Sydney in particular by about 10 years.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's hard to fathom just the wealth effect of getting them to do something in a time frame they otherwise wouldn't.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think we were opportunistic in the sense that we worked with a firm that was forward thinking at the time. And we were pro property, get in the property market, get in early. And a lot of these clients are very happy and appreciative that they got in early.
Yeah. When you look back, in retrospect, is one of the indulgences you can have, but it was a very sound. I mean, personally, I followed my own advice, and it's been very, very good for me and my family. But times have changed, and
they have.
And these days, and we'll talk about your practices in a minute, but these days, a lot of the feedback I get now is that the practices have been so skewed towards retirees that they're now trying to figure out how they engage those children who are going to inherit the wealth.
Hmm.
And they're now having to learn the things after 10, 15 years of perfecting retirement that we did first.
Correct.
So I just, you know, it's the whole world going around. So you then have your own business, which is Capital Wise, and that's a that was a self-licensed business, is that right?
No, I was licensed through a couple of dealer groups.
Okay.
Growing up, going through well, back in the 90s to 2000s. But I did eventually become self-licensed in 2014.
Right. And so you've been the principal advising, you did all your courses, went through all of those things. And what, just before we get into the licensee discussion, what are the sorts of clients that you personally had been gravitated towards in your actual business?
Yeah, I think, and again, Roxy, you'll appreciate this being a plan in the past, is you tend to gravitate, or your clients tend to gravitate to you when you have the same, first of all, your same age group is quite important. I think if I'm trying to, you know, as a young buck at 25, trying to tell a 65-year-old how to retire, they're not going to listen to me.
Well, I've got to ask you, how old are your kids?
Yeah.
Because my kids are in their 20s.
Yeah.
And sometimes they look at me as if I'm speaking Latin. It doesn't, you know, I make no sense to them.
No. My staff say the same about me. Right. So, look, I think a lot of times, look, there's what, 15,000 odd advisors now? We all give the same service. We all, within a certain parameter, we all give the same products. We have the same tools.
Yeah, the tram line's pretty narrow.
So I think it all comes down to personality.
Yep.
And comfort. If your clients like you, they're comfortable with you, they trust you, I think that's the secret sauce.
And in your own practice, you've had these clients that you live through the whole opt-in, the whole legislative kind of requirements over the last decade. What made you pull the trigger on starting an AFSL? When you did, which I believe was 2020, is that right?
Well, 2020, it was bored, yeah.
It was bored. That's definitely contrarian investing, because not that many people are running towards starting an AFSL 18 months after the Royal Commission.
Correct.
So I hope I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but why?
No, I get reminded every day. it stemmed out of necessity, really, because when I was with a dealer group that I was with and I was licensed before going self-licensed, I was happy. I was happy. I was getting the services I wanted. I was getting the support I wanted. But unfortunately, this group merged with another group, which I wasn't too happy with. And so I looked around at the time, and I'd never been with an institutionally owned dealer group. There would have been like a family-run dealer group or a privately owned dealer group. And the groups I saw at the time, they just didn't appeal for whatever reason. I won't get into details, but it just didn't appeal to me. And so I thought, well, you know what? I'm just going to back myself. And you know, back in 2014, self-licensing isn't what it is today. It's not as abundant as it is today. And I just backed myself in 2014 and said, if I fail, I fail because I failed.
I think first FOFA came 14, was it? Was it first run?
Like probably
first, the first thing, yeah.
Look, it was great. I was working good hours for a change. It was just me responsible for me. I was playing golf once or twice a week.
And were you doing the whole, having clients on yearly retainers or was that?
No, we were starting to get into the fee for service model.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So when it became compulsory, although you hadn't, it wasn't fully formed, but you're on the path.
We're on the path because again, when I went self-licensed, you had a bit more autonomy to basically make your own decisions.
Yep.
And I could see that's where the industry was going. There was chatter around the regulators, the industry, the associations. There was chatter. So I thought, well, let's just get ahead of this.
Yeah. So when you say that Finchley and Kemp was formed in 2020, mm-hmm. who were the first movers with you?
Well, I have a gentleman in my office by the name of Christian Tananata. He's been with me for over 8 years. So he was instrumental in helping me launch Finchley and Kemp. So literally it was just him and I. So he was my staff. I was the advisor.
So you've got this. You've got your own business. You've now started a licensee, which effectively is still your own business because it's only you two.
Yeah.
But that wasn't your business model, was it? What was on the whiteboard?
No. The business model is always just to be self-employed, play golf twice a week, and that was it, right?
Yeah.
But again, if you recall around the 2018 to 2020 timeframe, there were quite a few licensees that were in trouble. And closing down.
Yep.
And we were getting calls from advisors because, you know, I've been doing this for back then 20 odd years.
Yep.
So I knew quite a few people and they were just calling me out of the blue saying, look,
are you doing?
Yeah. Yep. We heard you're self-licensed. Do you mind if we jump on?
Yeah.
We trust you. We like you. We know you.
Yeah.
And I said, sure. Come on. We'll split the fees two ways. Off you go. Then it became, let's split the fees three ways and then four ways. And then I went, well, hold on. We can't do it five, six, seven, eight ways. So I stopped and I said, look, if you're really interested, let me add value to your fees, right? Let me build something. Let me get it done correctly. And we can probably look at bringing on, another five or six advisors. So Christian and I sat for about 12 months and built the processes, built the business, built the service offering. And we launched probably a few months just before COVID lockdown. Which is
okay.
So you're
that wasn't on the whiteboard either.
That wasn't on the whiteboard, right? But you know what? We cried for about a day and then we thought, well, opportunity. Let's just improve what we have. We've got a year. We don't even know how long we've got, but it ended up being a year. We got a year to basically fix our processes, refine our service offering, bring something really valuable to the market.
It makes you feel any better. We had 800 employees and about 80 practices and within 24 hours, we had to figure out how we're going to continue work.
Well, pretty much.
It was wild.
It was crazy times, right? Yeah, because it was the unknown. Yeah. No one knew. I mean, I think the second lockdown was a lot easier than the first because we kind of knew what we were getting into. The first, we had no idea.
And for everyone in Melbourne, there was two lockdowns. For the rest, you felt like you had one continual one. We're a national audience. And so for everyone in Perth, this is COVID. Google it or look it up on Wikipedia. It happened. Not necessarily to you guys, but just making sure everyone's got their play notes playing along at home. So
yeah.
But you mentioned you outlined your services day one.
Hmm.
Can you remember what the bullet points were they day one? Because I'm going to compare them against where you've ended up.
Yeah, they were very basic. First time even exploring this offering. So we thought, right, we'll just give them the compliance. We'll give them the CPD. We'll give them, the SOA templates, the FSGs.
Which is for your own practice anyway, right?
Which is the basic stuff, which as a self-licensed practice, all I did was expand it slightly. That's it. But once we got bigger, the snowballing effect happened and you had to start adding more things. And what I did also learn very quickly, Roxy, is we need to get value for money. Okay. The old days of just picking up a fee for an advisor to just be able to advise because they got a license, those models are not sustainable. I don't believe they are. Advisors are more tech savvy. They're more demanding. They're more educated. Their clients are more educated. They want value for money. Now, I'm not going to put a dollar figure on value for money because everyone sees value for money in a different price bracket, right? But as long as you've got value for money, your advisor's going to be happy. And as long as they see you looking to improve the services and add value to their businesses, I think that's what they want.
And look, when we were discussing before the podcast, I asked you some questions and you and your team put together. And I think when you've said add value, you've put, and here I'll read it, rather than rushing growth, we invested time in refining our processes, strengthening compliance, and designing a support structure that would generally make advisors' lives easier. So instead of saying you're adding value, you're like, well, where can I just make their lives easier?
Yep.
And I imagine that as a business owner, you're like, if I can do that, the money will follow.
Well, it's a very simple equation. I'm an advisor, right? And I'm still practicing. I don't have as many clients as I used to, but I look at it this way. As an advisor, what would I want from my licensee?
Yeah.
And I put that into practice. I also look at it, well, if I bring this into the licensee, how's it going to affect me as an advisor? Is it going to have a positive effect, negative effect, no effect, all right? So we're very big on trying to bring in technology to help advisors. Can I give a plug here if I can?
Yeah. I mean, the guy who actually brought me a lovely little goodie bag. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah. So we partnered with a few CRMs such as Dash, IntelliFlow, AdvisorLogic. And we roll that out to our advisors. So we have, Dash is a complimentary CRM we give to all our advisors. If they want something a bit more, they've got AdvisorLogic and IntelliFlow, which we support. We've also just signed a national agreement with Malu, the AI note taker.
What was that one again?
Malu?
Malu. Kieran, that might be a new name to us if we can just look that one up. But yeah. He's not. Kieran, the sound guy, has put me in my place. He goes, no, Roxy, it's not. So the good news is he can't speak on the podcast, so I don't get that from person.
So we've just signed a national deal with Malu where we've rolled it out complimentary to all our advisors.
Yep.
And it's it starts off as a very basic file note taker.
Yep.
Which reduces our advisors' times massively.
And to be clear, what you've just articulated as far as the value is that the Dash comes, and when you come on board, Dash is implied, right?
Yep.
However, and you have mentioned the word agnostic a few times and we've spoken, you are agnostic, but those other couple that you've mentioned there, you have a bit of a support network.
Absolutely.
Ability around.
Yeah, we've.
That's right. But you're agnostic to everything, but you're supporting only a few named ones, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, again,
makes sense.
Well, it's a commercial decision, right? We have to look at, well, if we're going to support this one over this one, how much is that going to cost us? Because that then flows through to the advisor's fees. Right.
Yep.
So if you can get something at a reasonable price, over something else, which is a bit more expensive, it does the same thing. Well, why not?
And I've just been informed, put back in my place by Kieran, the sound guy. We had Shaq and Hardy from Malu on this very podcast on the investment advice tech podcast last September.
Yeah.
So if they're listening, and I imagine everyone is, shout out to you guys. So you're getting a double plug. There you go.
There you go.
I took your plug and I doubled down.
There you go.
Thanks,
Shaq.
Kieran.
I'm on a discount now.
You can edit that out either. He won't. So you've done that, but I'm just going to take a quick pause. You've said that growth has been deliberate and values led. You've grown from effectively yourself and then you Christians, you're sort of like the two madmen.
Yeah.
And you're 40 odd now, is that right?
43.
43 advisors.
Yep.
And what's been the... what's been the growth for the last, say, 12 months?
If you average it out, it's one advisor a month, 12 advisors.
Okay. And do they come into existing groups of yours? Do they start their own business? What do they look like?
Yeah, so they're all quite varied, actually. Yeah. So some of our advisors are established businesses, and they're just looking at what we do and they like what we do.
Yep.
And there's a bit of cost saving for them too, but at the same time, they like the community that we build for them.
Yep.
There are other advisors that have come from employed roles and have now decided to go out on their own.
Yep.
And back themselves. We support startups. Not every single one that comes in front of us, but we do support certain startups because we do back.
What's the definition of support?
Oh, look, we will provide them a lot of time.
Yep.
We will also, if they need to, and if they ask for it, we'll attach them to one of the senior advisors.
Yep.
And again, they're not paid to do this. It's just they're doing it because they want to help.
Yep.
And they'll mentor them. And so they'll be available for phone calls, for tech sessions, for client meetings, things of that nature. And again, part of the community is a lot of our advisors give back to our advisors.
Yep.
So we do have mentoring sessions. We do have Q&A sessions, and a lot of advisors will help out the younger ones.
So if you're going to lean in, how do you – I mean, swapping licenses is a pain, right? It's frictionful.
Yeah.
So I suppose you don't have to worry about them getting all that information and then sort of cutting and running, because it's just a pain to do, right? So I suppose that's quite good. And if you're targeting – sorry, if you're taking on one per month, do you have any deliberate – like marketing to get them on? See, when you're shaking your head, not translating to the podcast.
No. I was going to say no. No, we look, again, maybe this stems from my advisor days when I was younger, but I it took quite a hostile, or has been a hostile area.
Look, from an outsider, I've kind of got a bit of a lens on the industry, but I'm not an owner of a licensee.
Well, you were.
Yeah, that's right. And I kind of still involved in some, but it almost is like a zero-sum game when you're just taking one off another and not growing their businesses. Yeah, is that what I kind of get? I think, is it happening still?
Yes, it is.
Really?
Yeah. Look, we are, well, I don't deliberately go out and market ourselves.
Yep.
We don't go out and we don't have any BDMs. I am the BDM, right? We don't have center of influence that we pay to go out and network for us.
Yep.
We purely work off word of mouth. Because we work with our partners, whether they're fund managers, BDMs, insurance agents, other advisors that know who we are, and they know who the advisors are. And they'll say to the advisor, well, we know who you are. We know who these guys are. We think you're a good fit. Why don't you go speak to them?
And in fact, you're cheating. I'd say driven by reputation, peer referral, and trusted relationships rather than
absolutely
recruitment.
Absolutely.
So that's, I suppose that's kind of it. But what, like, you're 43 now. Do you have a business plan as to what is the sweet spot?
Yeah.
Yeah, what is it?
Yeah, so it's on the record, so I'll say it out loud here in front of all your audience, but we are capping it and closing at 70.
70, okay. Okay, and sort of like a Goldilocks principle. So a lot of the sort of people who were self-licensed in small businesses don't want to make the jump to a big one. A lot of people in big ones don't want to make the jump there. Siri has just somehow jumped onto this podcast. So apologies. And I love Microsoft. So you've got that mid-tier one. When you've capped, why have you picked that figure?
So a good question. And I get to ask this a lot. And the simple answer is I don't want to overstretch myself. If I'm giving you a service, that is my limit.
Well, it's nearly double what you got now.
Yeah, but we're ready for that. Like, we have the infrastructure. We got the staff in place. We got the processes in place to get to 70. Yeah. We don't have to get above that number.
Well, here's a question, though. And we spoke about, you know, a big part of this podcast series. And when we're talking about, I was talking to PM Capital about, you know, why we're looking to talk to licensees and what growth looks like and whatnot is how a licensee can help grow their practices. Mm. What if you're really successful and you've got a few of these practices that are growing? Mm. Is there kind of, because is that happening with your business or is it a lot of succession plan within the network?
Yeah, there's a bit of succession plan in network.
Yeah.
I don't think you'll find a lot of our advisors want to grow their numbers internally. And we're not for everybody, Roxy. I mean, if we have a 10 or 15 planner firm come to us, we'll probably say, look, we can't add value to you. You've already got your process. You've already got your compliance.
Yep.
You've already got your SMA set up. You've already got your APL. We can't add value. Either go self-licensed or join one of the other.
Yeah, and honesty is the best policy.
Exactly.
You're right. You're right. And so on that, you've just mentioned an SMA. You know, a lot of licensees, a lot of businesses have made their way towards building it. You've completed your SMA. What's it look like?
Yeah. So we partnered with Resonant Asset Management out in Perth and Sydney, and we've been with them for just under 2 years. It's been an amazing partnership. We're very happy, and I hope they are too. But again, like anything, it's a partnership, right?
It's been a journey because I remember we did retail funds, and then I think Master Trusts, then Wraps, and now we're all like, it feels like it's got easier and better. Would that be fair to say?
I've got a stipulate here that we don't mandate it to our advisors. It's an offering.
Yep.
Okay. So they can go out and use a different SMA if they want to. They can go out and do retail or wholesale products.
I mean, look, I'm Andrew Rocks talking, not Sam, which kind of defeats the purpose of the governance and guidance you're doing, but just say.
We've got to allow the advisors to find their own feet, make their own decisions. We had advisors ask for it, so we delivered. Again, it's an offering.
And with your advisors, where are you located? We're here talking in Sydney. Your head office is in Kent Street, Sydney.
Where are they? Martin Place, actually.
Martin Place. Apologies. So where is your...
Yeah, so majority of our advisors are the Eastern Seaboard, obviously, because that's where we're based. So we have the majority here in Sydney and ACT. We have exposure in the Gold Coast, Brisbane, Melbourne, Perth, and surprisingly, Hobart.
There you go. Shout out to Hobart. And with the sort of the growth, you've mentioned 70s where you want to be. The value stack for being in your business, do the practices have an ability to sort of workshop with things like investment committees or workshop, or when you get together, because it is going to be a genuinely sort of more collaborative size, as the leader and CEO, is that something either now or in the future that you'll be looking to
do? We do that now. Take input from our advisors. We have a very open door policy.
Yeah.
And look, we don't know what we don't know, right? So if an advisor comes to us and they bring something in front of us and say, look, can you look at this? We go, this is brilliant. Can we bring it across for the whole network? And it works. We don't believe we have the answers for everything. When you have 43 brains, it's a lot better than one.
Right. Okay. And the actual other sort of aspect I had is that you've given us an idea of the types of practices you've got, which sound like they're quite specialized. Some of them might be specialized as far as the clients they serve or the demographic or the skill sets they've got. And they're not necessarily looking to grow that 15, 20, 30 size sort of organization. Within that lens, how do you view that one? So you've got those 43 brands and you don't even mention names. How do you personally view which ones are successful? What are the metrics that you personally?
Okay. So again, we don't look at FUM. We don't look at revenue. I mean, that's a practice. That's up to each individual. I mean, if they want to play golf 4 days a week and work 1 day a week and earn $100,000, well, that's their choice, right? If they want to work 7 days a week and earn $2 million, that's their choice. Obviously, if they're not earning enough, we'll say to them, look, it's not fair. You're paying us fees and we're taking everything. So maybe you should look elsewhere.
Yep.
But the way we look at success is as long as the advisor is happy doing what they're doing. I mean, you would know that we went through the Royal Commission. We went through FOFA. We've gone through the reduction of advisors because of the education standards. There were a lot of advisors that were not happy doing what they were doing. There's a lot of stress out
and
there.
And change was just accelerated.
It was just too much, right? It was just too much. And we just want to bring the joy back, right? We just want advisors to sit there and do what they want to do, which is just look after your clients. That's it.
Happy though. So how do you know what a happy advisor looks like to you?
They don't leave.
They don't leave, yeah. I get that. But what are other sort of leading indicators? Because you've mentioned you're not overly concerned, because if someone turns over $1 million and keeps $700,000, that's a good business. Someone turns over $2 million and keeps zero or maybe loses money, that may be financially not a good business. Yeah. Maybe they're under financial stress.
That's a good question. Maybe you need to bring one on the podcast and ask them.
Oh, well, you've heard it here, Kieran. He's just going to give me a couple of those. So if you've been called out by Sam, you're either one of those two. I'm not going to say which one.
I think it's also the fact that, look, if you treat them like human beings and treat them well, it's a very simple ingredient. It's a very simple ingredient.
So how do you do that at scale, right? So
we're not at scale. That. 43 is not scale.
No, you're in 5 different states. Mm. So do you have a national conference? Do you have state based things? Explain to me how you are either in front of them, in front of a screen, or belly to belly, and what's the cadence of that?
Yeah, so we do have our virtual PD days, of which we run. I do travel around quite a bit, personally, and meet every advisor, you know, 3-4 times a year.
Okay.
We do have a national conference.
That's a threat, by the way, everyone.
Yeah, some people hide. So we do have a national conference every 18 months that we hold. We don't do it every year because we think it's a bit too quick.
Where was the last couple?
Well, Gold Coast, Hobart, and next one's in Queenstown.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, really good locations.
Fantastic locations. Yeah. So we are, and again, we do have, like I said, the peer meetings. So people in different states interact with each other. Yep. So we encourage that. So we have a very open door policy.
So let's move. I was going to say, we're picking the mood up or down. Either way, you get to choose. Let's talk about compliance, right?
You bring it down.
Because you're actually, you're the director, right?
Yeah.
This is on you, yeah?
Yeah.
How have you put in place things that make you sleep at night as the responsible manager and director of this?
Well, I'm not the RM. We have two advisors to the RM. Yep. So just from a disclosure point of view. But I am the director.
Yep.
And I don't sleep at night. I don't think you ever can when you're running a business of this magnitude and you're responsible for 43 lives.
Yeah.
You just can't. I mean, I take my responsibility very seriously. I take compliance very seriously. We have a very commercial lens on compliance, but we have a very strict lens on compliance.
So commercial means that you are allowing freedom within boundaries, but your boundaries once crossed are non-negotiable. Is that correct?
Spot on.
Yeah, yeah. So without, you know, you've been doing this for many years and it may or may not be sort of your current business, but what are red flags for advisors' behavior just in general? Because the listeners to this are going to be people, advisors, but they're going to be other licensees going, yeah, that's right. I've got the same red flags, right? So if we're calling out sort of behavior of red flags that you see, then, you know, but maybe people can self-regulate.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a hard one because you've got 15,000 advisors. Everyone's going to have their own quirks and personalities. I mean, if from a high level point of view, I think if you look at their audits, that's a big one. If they're not looking to change and adapt and improve processes, I think that's another big one. I think if they're also very disengaged, that's a red flag.
Let's double down on that because I hear that a lot.
Yeah,
people all the time tell me that the most successful, biggest business writers, people who give the most, who attend everything, the people with the least time give the most time.
Correct.
And it's the other side of that coin, which quite often you're saying potentially can be red flags. If
you can, because you don't know. You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, correct.
And the people that do engage and do participate and are open in communication, you know, you build a rapport, you build a relationship. The ones that don't, well, you're guessing.
With the back office of your business, do you have any sort of guidance around, do you have any power planning companies you work with or what's sort of the
– Yeah.
Have you got any sort of engine room sort of
– Yeah, builds? We do. Yeah, yeah. So again, part of the service on this, if I come down to value for money, is what we can bring to the advisors and make their life easier. As again, we said technology is a big one. So we're very big into technology and improving their time.
Yeah.
We also have we've partnered probably about a year ago with Padua and Matt Esler and Amory. I believe they've been on the podcast a few times.
Knocking out plans.
Yep. So we partnered with them in relation to power planning.
Yep.
And that's been a very good partnership. What else have we done? We've partnered with, someone's going to kill me because I'm going to forget top of my head who else we've got partnerships with.
I've got down here's other services. You can refer them if they need some marketing, website stuff like
that. Yeah.
You let them have tripartite agreements if they're looking to borrow against their book.
That's right. So we've got a tripartite agreement with one of the major lenders. Makes life
who's good.
Who's good?
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of in the game in another world. But who do you think's good?
We have arrangements or relationships, I should say, with NAB and Judo Bank.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Which is
no surprises there, everyone. Surprises. Yeah. But okay. Cool.
But again, we also have, like you said, we have a website builder that people can use. We've got, we even have relationship with recruitment companies. So if you're looking to hire us, an assistant or a power planner or another advisor in your business, we've vetted both onshore and offshore.
Yep.
So we got relationships with that. So you can plug straight into that. And again, it's just offering the options. Not everyone's going to take every service we offer up.
Yep.
But it's that one service that someone's going to ask for. We're going to say, yep, we've got it ready for you.
Yeah, and I think if you can, from a commercial perspective, from your end, if that is a pay-as-you-go sort of cost where it's incremental, you haven't had to build the engine completely assuming, then there's a little bit of friction there, but mainly it's just an add-on benefit.
Well, the friction is, if there is too much friction, we just move on to the next one, right?
Yeah, true.
And again, it keeps the cost down as for the fee. And at the same time, the advisor still has control over which relationship they want to maintain, which one they don't. Again, they don't have to use the services or the partners we partner with, but it probably just makes their life easier if they do.
So you're 5 years in, Finchley and Kent, okay? What are some of the examples of people who've come to you and look like X, and now I've grown to be a better business. Now, you can mention the names or you don't have to, but and where did what involvement do you genuinely think that your licensee has had in that?
Yeah, look, I mean, I'd like to think the licensee has had some involvement, but at the end of the day, like I'll do a shout out to one of my advisors, right? Sanjay Bali down in Engadine, came across from one of the larger groups, was extremely unhappy. She's been in the industry many, many, many years. I'll be polite and not say how many. And she came and she was ready to retire. Like she was ready to sell her business. She wasn't happy, but yeah, what you gonna do? She's been with Finch St. Kent now. This is her fourth year. Every year she has improved her revenue stream year on. And she's happy. Her husband came to me at a dinner one night and he looked at me in the eye and he goes, "Thank you." I said, "Oh, you're welcome. It's just a dinner." He goes, "No." He goes, "Thank you for bringing back my wife."
Wow. Okay.
And then you can see a tear in his eyes. Wow. Right? And I'm sorry, Sandra. I know your husband's probably not going to like this. But and I turned to my wife at the end of the dinner and I said, "This is why I do what I do."
Yeah, yeah. That's well, there you go. That's and you're saying that the kind of – when you mention the sort of practices that come to you, some come from banks in, some come from larger. Do you get many that come from self-license and just go, "It's all too hard"? Not really.
No,
it's not
no,
really that way.
No. I think because – again, I mean, this is just my theory on it. I don't have a science behind it, but I think the self-licensing has now started to evolve quite rapidly.
Yeah.
And more self-licenses are opening up. But if you read Colin Williams's weekly – LinkedIn post that he puts up, which is again a Padua product. He always shows that the numbers of new licenses opening up is less than in number of self licenses closing down.
Right.
So we may be starting to see some self licensed individuals that are finding it tough, looking at it and going, "Well, maybe we need to partner with another self licensed firm."
It's a risk management play. I mean, you sit down, you speak with your fellow directors, maybe your advisors, your accountant, your lawyers, and they sort of go, "Well, if you're not fully in, you can't be half in."
No, governance. You can't. No,
governance is a full tilt here.
Look, I look at when I look at recruiting an advisor, I don't look at the business very much, and at the first stages, I look at the person. Right? Are they good people? Because good people will make good advisors. Good advisors don't necessarily make good people.
Yeah.
And it's the same in self-license. You may be an amazing financial planner, but you may be a terrible business person.
Can I ask you a question? This is just from me, not from Ensemble. When you look at LinkedIn, if someone's chopped and changed licensees and businesses every 2 or 3 years, I'm personally not that interested in that. And that sucks because there could be a reason for everyone. I don't know how many there are, but that's my personal. What about you?
I agree, Roxy. I mean, again, we give everyone the benefit of the doubt and hear a story because everyone's got a story. So we'll have a discussion. But very quickly, you can, to a certain degree, realize, is this person for us or not? And again, we won't waste their time by onboarding them if we don't think they're the right fit, because for us, it's an extensive onboarding process. It takes a lot of time, takes a lot of effort, and it's expensive. So if we don't believe they're going to be with us long term, we will just say, "We'll help you find another home." And we will. We refer them on to other licensees.
Yeah, okay. So that reminds me of when school principals trade kids at the end of the year. I've got a few mates who are school principals and they're like, "Oh, sometimes when we just want to like offboard a family or two and someone else, and then we have to take them." So anyway, no, I digress yet again, my own thoughts and opinions. So just to sort of summarize some of the things, the key thing here is that you are looking to cap this business. Mm. And what that says to the people who currently are in your business is that you will be stretched, but you won't break.
We won't be stretched.
Yep.
No.
Okay. So so that comfort around the continual quality supply of goods and services. Mm-hmm. What it says to people that are considering your offer is that it won't last forever.
Yep.
I'm interested in hearing about any kind of value proposition you've got around older advisors in your network. Mm. And having an ability to potentially give them a way of crystallizing the value of their business over a period of time. Is that something that you've seen or promoting?
Yeah, it is. And that's the beauty of having a very wide and varying advisor network where we have very young advisors all the way down to mature advisors.
Yeah.
And everything in between. And there's always opportunities. And the advisors, we're looking at one now internally as we speak. Yeah. And advisors know each other because they meet at conferences, they meet at PD days, they meet at social events, Christmas parties, whatever it's not. And they know each other, so they know I'm selling my business to this person.
But if you're involved, you're also great at DD because you can
absolutely
get both sides.
It's well, exactly.
Clients and revenue numbers.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we know what the revenue stream is. We know what the client base is. We know what the drop-off rates are. We know what, you know, we know what the compliance is. We know all this. And so we will get involved and say, look, we're very happy to sit in the middle between the two of you and help you both out.
A question without notice. Is there any temptation of, for instance, taking a capital play in any of these? Like, because you know both sides. You've just mentioned you have all of this great quality and quantity of information about a business. Mm. Is potentially the house or the business a great destination for some of these businesses? Whilst it might be a timing thing, whilst you're looking to find the right advisor.
Yeah, I mean, I know you've had a few people on this podcast that are doing that now.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I asked.
We will always look at things. Like, and that's one of our positives is we will never say no. We will look if it works for everyone and it's fair. Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
I mean, if it's not, then we'll just walk away.
Why these things are logical. I mean, you're getting both sides. And so, you know, sometime, and I'm more thinking about when things like the timing's a bit clunky. So it's a really bad way of saying it. Someone gets sick or they have a problem or the advisor has something, but the time frame for their succession is kind of like sped up, and maybe you might need to get involved. But anyway, there's a whole thing there.
I mean, these things you have to manage as they happen. I mean, we had one of our advisors fall sick.
Yep.
And one of the other advisors just put their hand up and said, we'll jump in and help out.
Yeah.
We had one advisor go on maternity leave for 12 months. One of the advisors put their hand up and said, we'll help run the business for 12 months.
Okay, I'm interested in the second one. The first one obviously can happen, and that's a case by case, but that's almost like, I mean, your father was a medico. That's like a locum. So, you know, the country GP has to have some time off and there's a, okay, wow.
Yeah, and this is what I'm saying when we're building a community. It's not the buzzword and everyone says we're building a community. We actually do have advisors that really do want to give back.
Yep, that's good. It's good. And the so I'm looking here about you've given a couple of shout-outs to some technology. You've got are there any sort of other licensees that you kind of do you guys ever get together and talk shop or
look we
they're, I mean some of them are they're just completely different business some are Mars and Venus right
yeah, I mean that. Yeah I mean look when you look at some of the people in the industry we are very pleasant with everyone we have other well I personally because
I've hashtag been gift bag
because I've been doing this for so long I know quite a few of the AFSL heads personally.
Yep.
So we've grown up in this industry together and we trade stories and, you know, we talk about things in relation to some of the bigger AFSLs. That's not where I play. And no, I don't engage. That's just not my market.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's right. So, I probably remiss of me. Have you nailed the life insurance thing for your advisors? Because I always like asking because – like, do many of your advisors do life insurance? Yeah. How has it been delivered? It's given that we started together, Sarah, and we probably sold income protection in the same month. ACNL, God love them. And we always did lots of life insurance. When I talk to advisors now, just the friction around delivering the thing that we took for granted devastates me. How's your net worth responded to that?
I mean, this podcast isn't long enough to give my opinion on what's happening in the industry for insurance, but we do have a couple of insurance-only advisors. One of them, Brett Kelly, 2020, very successful insurance broker. A lot of our advisors do refer their insurance business
to him. So is the ecosystem evolving?
It is, because I think insurance is now becoming very much a specialist area, very much like aged care is. You and I were selling income protection at ACNL, like you mentioned, it was $50 a month premium, clean skin, off you went. Yep. Right now, you're talking about $500, medicals till the cows come home.
Yeah,
It's hard, and you know, premium increases of 30-40% each year. It's not easy.
Yeah, it's really tough.
Yeah, and no, I don't have the secret sauce to.
Yeah, but it's sort of the answers self evolve by having a couple of
So if you've got 40-odd people and you've got four or five that insurance only, there's probably a good ratio there, right? So
yeah.
I mean, probably some are dabbling and what?
Some are dabbling and some are, you know, doing the necessities.
Yeah.
But in relation to full-on pure insurance-only businesses, we have a couple.
Yeah, nice. So a part of, you know, the positive evolution of financial advice with Ensemble is, you know, we also, so we kicked off in 2014. So we had 5 years before COVID. We've had 5 years through COVID. And what we're doing this year is we're actually going out and doing a lot more events. Mm. So if you're listening to this podcast, you'll see probably you've already been sent information about attending events, about becoming a member, about a bunch of other things. I would urge you, given that we have 11,000 advisors and about 2,000 seats over the year, if you get something in the email or you've asked, probably have a look at doing it if you're interested. So that's just my quick sort of community service announcement, because we're getting a lot of those kind of things. And but in saying that, the purpose of Ensemble is was historically community for those people who didn't have a community. Now, quite ironically, it's evolved to having a community within the big licensees, the small and the medium. And we've made sure we've stayed in our lane as well, right? Mm. So we've never got involved in policy investments, et cetera. But I'm not going to ask you the life insurance question. You're 30 years in this industry.
34 this year.
34 years in this industry. Where do you see it in 10 years' time at the coalface?
I see massive opportunity. It's, I mean, for the younger advisors coming through, if we can tweak the PY year and the requirements, and we can open
make it less stupid.
Well, yeah, I mean, if we can bring in Alistair from Striver to bring in more advisors in the industry, stuff like that.
Shout out Alistair.
Shout out Alistair, yeah. I think anyone that's coming into this industry, it's a very positive outlook, very positive. People like you and I, Roxy, we're finished, right? We got, what, 5 years left in us?
I'm literally in front of you. I can hear you when you talk.
Yeah,
well, this is a live face-to-face podcast.
Look, advising for me within 5 years, I'll be done. I'll be focusing on a deal. Advising will be finished. But for anyone that's probably under 40, I see blue sky.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyone above 40, they're just going to continue what they're doing and hopefully be very happy.
I also think it's got to do with the way in which they think as well. You can have young 50-year-olds, you can have young 50-year-olds.
Yeah, like we're talking generally here. Yeah,
I get it. So, so blue skies. There's blue skies. There's scarcity around Finchley and Kent. I didn't even ask you about how the name come up.
It
sounds very British.
It does. It was designed because we didn't want to overshadow the practices names, right? So we didn't want anything with wealth or finance or anything like that in it. But we wanted something, I wanted something that sounded strong, which is what you just said. It does sound very British. But Finchley was the street I lived in London.
There you go.
And Kent was Kent Street in Sydney where it evolved.
I knew I had Kent Street in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, one of my first businesses called Gresham Street, right? So, and I think it was exactly the same premise. So, for two unimaginative genesis of stories, they end up with decent names, right? So, with that, Sam, look, I know that a lot of your team members have lent into Ensemble. I thank you for your time today. Yeah.
Thank you.
It's the positive evolution of financial advice is not a one size suits all outcome.
Correct.
There are specialities in relation to what clients want, what advisors give, where they're from, how they do their back office, how they're licensed, etc. And there is definitely a place for you. And now, if you're out there listening to this podcast and you'd like to learn more about Finchley and Kent, clearly Sam's the man. He's going to be answering your questions there. But there'll be a link. There'll be a link in the on the notes there that Kieran, the sound guy, will do. For everyone listening, Kieran reminded me about 45 minutes ago. It's his last day, so just joking, Kieran. So he'll edit that last bit out. But no, Sam, look, thank you very much, mate. It's been we've bumped into each other many times. I've threatened this on you, and you've been a delightful guest. But I knew that was going to be.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you,
thank you for having us on. Thank you.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you, buddy.